This is the Community Forum, a public affairs presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. Welcome to the program. It is good to have you along as we talk with State Senator Linda Schlegel-Culver of the 27th Senatorial District in Pennsylvania. You may recall she won the seat in a special election last year to replace the departing Senator John Gordner. Now, Senator Culver is up for re-election again this year in the normally scheduled election. She does have some opposition as well. Today, though, we're going to talk to her about some general issues and about her first year in the new job. Thanks for joining us on the program, Senator. Let's begin with a look at the change. What is it like to go from State House to State Senate?
It's a very similar position. I mean, and what they say is, you know, the House and the Senate basically have the same mission statement. We basically do the same thing, but how we function and operate are completely different. I would say the House is more chaotic. There's 203 members you're dealing with, you know, two different parties. You know, the floor is louder, caucus is louder. The Senate is much more deliberate and efficient, and you can be when you have 50. You know, our committees are smaller. You're with your colleagues on each side throughout the day frequently. You know, when we meet off the floor, there's a little room in the back so we can, you know, stack the meetings quickly because it's more efficient. So I think that's the difference. Your territory is much bigger. I'm spending a lot of time in my car, you know, making sure that I'm getting into each county. I try to do so weekly just to make sure that, you know, everyone feels as they're as important as the other county. But, you know, we're in Harrisburg. I just did 3 weeks of budget hearings. So those weeks I'm not getting around like I normally would.
What's the drive from left, from east to west? If Luzerne all the way through Snyder.
From end to end?
Yeah.
I've never done an end to end yet because you'd have to be at the, you know, furthest sections of Snyder County up into the furthest of Luzerne. I would guess.
That'd be a 2-hour drive.
I would say at least a 2-hour drive. Okay. I mean, for me, from my house, which I'm thinking I'm almost center, to get to parts of Luzerne sometimes is over an hour and a half. And not everything happens in my district in Luzerne. Because Luzerne is a big county, so some of it will happen further, but it includes my parts of Luzerne County.
Okay. So calmer in person, but more hectic when you're not in the office, I guess, to get around.
It's just a different pace. I mean, anytime you go for elected office, and I don't care at what level, you know, whether it be federal, state, or local, there's that transition, there's that adjustment to this new way of life. Okay. And, you know, you forget about it when you first do it, but you're like, no, this is different, and you need to take a moment and readjust.
And we've talked in the past about how the newer you are, the less influence you have. Did coming into this from the House and also on the heels of Senator Gordner, did that kind of give you a jump start?
I mean, I knew what I was getting into. I was leaving a place of seniority. I think I would have been number 11 in seniority in the House to a position where I was the last person in the door. That changes things. Because the Senate's smaller, though, that spear of, you know, seniority is a little less. There's a lot more dialogue, a lot more responsiveness because, again, it's a smaller body. I mean, but Senator Gordner would have been number one in seniority with a leadership position. So that does change things. And I can tell you, you know, within the Senate district, there's 6 House members, and all of them but one are freshmen. But we have coalesced with each other to partner, to support our communities as best we can on legislation, knowing, you know, we think there's strength in numbers for this area, and that's what we've tried to do.
Okay. We were just discussing at work, my coworker and I, about Senator Gordner going from Senate to the position he did and why you do that. But then it also made us wonder, why do you go from House to Senate? What prompted it? What was the kind of the push for you behind wanting to make that change?
I mean, honestly, it was a very quick decision I had to make, and I like to have – I just came off of an election, entering into another one, knowing I would be into another one within a year because I was filling his seat. For me, I think it was about redistricting. I had lost Snyder County, which I had represented my whole career. I had lost the lower end of Northumberland County, which my whole career was also in. And when I say my career, not just, you know, my 12 years, but my 21 working with Representative Merle Phillips, it was heartbreaking because you get to know, I know they're going to need sewer. I know this playground's going to need update. I know they have a big water project coming. I know we have a flooding issue we have to deal with. And I got a new area, Montour County, is a wonderful area. And it actually goes back to one of Merle's original districts. When I first started for him. But I mean, I see just being here with the time I've been that, you know, we're all interconnected, these counties. It's important we're working together. And I think I saw it as a way to regain the areas that I had lost and bring all the areas together. So that was what was important for me.
That makes perfect sense. And that was not one of our speculations, but it makes sense that it was. The timing was good for you when that seat came up with the redistricting at the same.
And during the election cycle, I'm like, if I could just keep my old district and get the new district together, it would be great. And then when this came up, my husband said, "You've been saying this for a year, that you wanted them all together." So for me, it was that opportunity to put my experience to work, get someone else in, fresh set of eyes into the house, and. Bring my experience with me and, you know, go on. I mean, Senator Gordon was a wonderful mentor for me. And hopefully I'm representing the people, you know, as much as he did and trying to put my own mark on it as well. And, it's a journey.
Okay. Let's talk a bit about the budget. Like you said, 3 weeks of hearings just concluded. But what are your thoughts on that budget? Is it you had a year under Governor Shapiro? While you were in the House, and now you're in this, starting another full year. A full year in the Senate, starting a second year. Your thoughts on that? Do the Republicans look at it as, well, this is what we expected, or were there any surprises?
I mean, you're never surprised. I mean, a budget truly should be sort of building on what you had the year before, you know, correcting things, accommodating for new things. But I think the most surprising and concerning is some of the budgeting practices where education, who, as anybody who follows it knows, they get more money every year. And a lot of governors like to tout that we've given them more than anybody has before. So, you know, it's a significant amount of money. And by the Constitution, we're required to budget out for, you know, the year we're in and four additional years, just so we can plan in the future. Education is not getting any money in the budget for the next 4 years, according to the proposal. And I understand it's a proposal, as we all should. But our concern is, do you not need any more money because you always have? Is there something you don't want to tell us as, you know, elected officials or taxpayers? Or do you just not know? I mean, that's the part where we're pretty able to predict, you know, where we're going to need to put money in for growth and where we're. So that's concerning, where other areas did have those outlying years budgeted out for them and you could ask questions. So the way the budget sits today, the proposal, it would eliminate any reserves that we have and anything in the rainy day fund. That is very concerning to us. And I was there when we literally had nothing in the rainy day fund. It had all been spent down. But you think if we get into a crisis and we don't have reserves, it's like a savings account. Where are we getting the money from? We're going to have to go back to the taxpayers, reach into their pockets and say, I'm sorry, we're in a crisis. We didn't save. We didn't prepare. And it's important that we do that. And we have painstakingly made sure these last several budget cycles, we are putting money into the rainy day fund. We have reserves that we are prepared. Most concerning is that all that money would be gone. And we have all these programs that haven't been budgeted for the next 4 years. We need to make sure we're doing the smartest thing we can do with people's money.
Okay. So the rainy day fund, it's just kind of not specified as how you can use it, but you obviously, differing parties have different views on it, and you're saying, they're saying, well, this is what we need. We need this now to avoid raising taxes, or we can spend money elsewhere. But what would qualify then to you or, you know, your party to say this would qualify that the rainy day fund should be used?
When we're spending money in the Commonwealth, it's not an executive decision. It's a legislative decision because we are the direct voice of the people. Any spending has to come from the legislative body. So that would be something that people would talk to their legislators about when we were making those decisions.
Let's talk about recreational marijuana. That's been in the news for a number of years and has moved ahead in some states. Working on it here, obviously. Your thoughts on that is I actually heard one representative or senator say they were in favor of it, but not the way Governor Shapiro wants to do it. Is that kind of the way you're looking, or do you totally different thoughts on that?
I have totally different thoughts on that. Okay. I am a hard no. Okay. And the reasons are, I mean, as you know, we did the medical marijuana, which I had voted for, wishing our federal government would have taken care of it and put it as any other drug, any other research methods, you know, any other restrictions or you know, the guidelines that they have to follow. But each state is doing it, so each state has it set up differently. But it was becoming a medical concern. Other drugs weren't working on specifically children having seizures. And sometimes this is a better way to do it. So if you think of it as a drug, a monitored prescription, it's different. But what this would do is would put this drug back on the street, and any study that's been done previously that anybody quoted you, the THC levels was 11% in the 60s and 70s. And that's where those 40-year-long studies were from. When we did medical marijuana, I believe that it was around 36%, maybe a teeny bit higher in that range. And we had no studies on that. But today – it can go all the way up to 100%. And most recent studies are showing people using medical or marijuana on the street or medical, and the THC is high, we're having psychotic and psychosis, psychotic outbreaks, and people have psychosis. We're having mental health issues from it. We don't know what this is going to do to people. And to just say we're going to – it gives us money. It's for the children, which was a quote from one of the secretaries in the budget. What are you doing for the children? Because if you look at other states that have implemented it, they will caution you. Our ER visits with children are higher. Driving under the influence is higher. Children and youth services are higher. It's concerning to me. What are we doing to society by doing this? And it's important to me if we are going to do that, we get it right. It is a drug. I think we need to be cognizant of that. And any drug is going to have an impact. And if you ask any pharmacist, they will tell you when you take a prescription or you take a drug, you need to weigh out is this better than the side effects? Is this helping me? Is this giving me quality of life or helping me live? I don't know that anybody's asking that question here.
One of the arguments we often hear is, but if we tax it, then we've got that revenue. You know, people will do it elsewhere, et cetera. Is there any truth to that, or is that kind of a stretch to you to say that this is really going to outweigh the drawbacks?
I don't know that we know that at this point. Every time we do something like the gambling money or the Marcellus Shale money, we overestimate what we're going to be receiving. I think that given some of the medical community's findings right now, I think we need to pause and figure this out. It's not something we should be taking lightly, and we should be paying attention. We're impacting people's lives. And once you legalize it, people tend to think it's okay. And is it okay or is it not okay is going to be the question. And we have to figure that out. If we're doing it for tax money, well, then there's all kinds of illegal things we could start taxing. And what does that do to our society? So I think there are going to be hard questions we're going to have to ask of ourselves. And this is a time where people should become engaged. And you'll have people that are completely for it that surprise you. And then you'll have people that are absolutely against it that you thought would definitely be for it. So it's quite the issue going on. And when I do my next town hall, it'll be one of those questions we're asking, you know, where are people at on this?
Okay. So is this something that that will be this year affected, or is it going to be something that we're going to be seeing pushed down the road a while?
I mean, we've been talking about it for years. Now we have a governor that's pushing it. I don't know. It's going to be, you know, I think what the public response is, how they're communicating with their legislator and what their legislator decides to do.
Thanks again to State Senator Linda Schlegel-Culver for joining us on the program today to update us on issues and just talk a bit about her first year on this new job. We want to thank you, the listener, for joining us on today's WPGM Community Forum. This has been a presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. The views expressed on the community forum by our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the moderator, staff, or management of this station.